Hello and welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 5. I'm Rafe Blanford in Sussex and with me are...
Steve Litchfield.
And Ewan Spence up in Edinburgh.
Okay, hi guys. So Ewan, I know you've been off travelling somewhere this week. Can you tell us where you've been and what you've been up to?
Yeah, straight after Nokia World the week before in Amsterdam, I've been in Paris in the north suburb of Saint-Denis at Le Web Trois 2007. 2,000 delegates, one of Europe's largest Web 2.0 conferences. A lovely conflagration of entrepreneurs, funders, press, and me.
Sounds like the usual Web 2.0 crowd then.
It does, yes, but there's a very big focus on Europe. We always, the idea of tech and VC is always, especially in the internet, it's always sort of the thing is Silicon Valley. But, you know, everywhere around the world there's stuff like this, and Europe is becoming, it's getting there. It's still, in my opinion, 2-3 years behind Silicon Valley, especially in terms of the financial side. But in terms of some of the European companies, and obviously specifically some of the European companies with a mobile focus, it's been a very successful conference.
So then, did you see anything there that was particularly relevant to mobile, or indeed anything that just caught your eye?
There. I've actually got four which I'm going to very briefly mention. One of them is an overarching service called Doppler, D-O-P-P-L-R, with the fashionable dropped E that seems to be in vogue for these companies at the moment. It is a web service which allows you to register and basically tell where you're traveling. So I was in Amsterdam 2 weeks before, I was in Paris last week, and it will tell you which of your friends in your social network are also going to be there at the same time. So you can have serendipitous meetings. Now, two reasons I like this. The first one is it's now open up. Anybody can register. Before, it was invite only. But also, in the weeks before the web, they actually announced a version for mobile handsets, which is perfectly formatted for the S60 and UIQ browser. So it's very easy just to have a quick look when you're traveling somewhere and see who's around. Now, obviously, for globetrotters like myself, it's a great boon. For people like Steve, for example, might be less useful. but certainly services like this where they do some targeting is very nice. And I like Doppler because they really have done a good mobile version of their website. In terms of pure plays on mobile, we've already briefly talked about Mipin on the website, which is an RSS aggregator that makes it look like a portal. They're doing very well. Spoke again now with the management team behind that, and they've got some great traffic since their launch, which we interviewed them in the podcast about 6 to 8 weeks ago. Two other services, Uplay, I'll talk more about next week. It's a games portal that allows you to make your own games as well as download others' Flash games. We've got an interview with the CEO there, which we'll be putting out probably Wednesday or Thursday, I would think. And one of the companies that was there, it's just started up, it's called Zybe. It uses the synchronization software on S16 UIQ to allow you to back up your contacts, your address book, your agenda, and your notes over the air, and it's then backed up on a website. So we talked a lot last week about how backup can sometimes be temperamental. So this is a great solution when you're on the road. You just click the software on your handset, it gets backed up to a website. And as a great secondary feature, all of that's accessible from the website as well. So you have a portable address book, and it's got the de facto, here are some of your friends as well. So it looked through my address book, and it saw that a friend of mine called Brian, who runs a PR company up in Kinross, was already registered with this service. And I could tell the service, we are friends. We could also do direct messages and keep in touch that way. There's certainly a huge amount of innovation going on in Europe, and you know, because of geographical factors and consumers, business and enterprise, there's a lot more in mobile going on in Europe than there is in America. And I think the web actually showed that.
Can I ask a question about this last product to you? And was it Zybe? How do you spell that? And does it use SyncML?
It's ZYB, and yes, it does.
Cool. Okay, I'll have to look at that after the show.
Okay, so this week, rather than talking about first I should say thank you, Ewan, for telling us about the web, and thought this week, rather than talk about one overriding topic which we've done thus far, we'd go through some hot topics that have come up in the last week or two, and I think the big one to start with is probably Engage, which is due to launch on Tuesday, so the day after you'll probably be listening to this podcast. It is going to be a bit of a limited launch. I know Ewan's been looking into the details of this and has a few thoughts on it. So do you want to take that away, Ewan?
Yeah, so for those of you who aren't aware, Nokia's N-Gage platform is available on a number of handsets as an icon, N95, 1N95, 8GB, N80, 1N82, and so on. And the idea, of course, is Nokia's preceded millions of handsets out there ready to take advantage of the gaming system. Now, unfortunately, this launch that's coming up this week, we understand that it's only going to be for N81 devices. So the number one selling N-Series handset won't yet have access to the N-Gage platform. Chrissy, who does sterling work on the site as well, has pointed out it looks rather like a limited beta launch. And I'm going to roll this back to some of the experiences at Le Web. There was a lovely talk from the head of BT Design, JP Rangaswamy, which is basically the old way of doing business is closed product launches and testings and then launching in a blaze of publicity. It is dying off, certainly with electronic and on the internet. And the N-Gage launch this time around still looks like that old keep everything quiet, don't do anything, then go boom. It's a little bit of internet marketing, but nothing that will make a significant amount of difference. I think if Nokia had taken a step back and done all this organizing and display completely openly on the blog and on the website, and say, look, we're going to have to scale back. We're going to make this launch just for a couple of handsets to check we've got the infrastructure load. I think they would get a lot more positive feedback than going, we're launching for the N81. The end result is the same in terms of what Nokia get, but in terms of PR and the message that comes over, it's not. Nokia is really trying to redefine the gaming market here. It's one of the important planks that they have in the OVI social software system that they're hoping will ride them through 2008 and 2009 and keep them on top of the mobile software pile. But I think they're going about the N-Gage launch in completely the wrong way. They're still very much stuck in old school methodology. And I really think that if you're going to redefine a gaming platform, redefine what a mobile game is, redefine how it's delivered, then I think you need to redefine how your PR team works as well. They've dropped the ball here.
Steve, have you got any thoughts on this?
I can sympathise tremendously with how they're doing it. I agree with you, and the wording and their release and the blog entry and so forth hasn't been terribly special. I think it's a great shame that, for example, the N95 8GB is not included, because you'd have thought people would be buying that almost for being part of the very cutting edge of N-Gage next generation. I think N95 8GB owners will be very disappointed in particular. The N95 Classic people have only had the V20 firmware for a week or two, so this is all new ground for them anyway, but I'm sorry for the 8GB owners out there.
I mean, I'm inclined to agree in one sense, but I do think this is really purely a marketing issue. And in one sense, it makes a lot of sense for Nokia to do it in this way. I might draw a comparison to the Nokia Map service, which rolled out gradually. It was available on just a couple of handsets to start with. And a similar thing has actually happened for the music store as well. It was available on, as we know, in just the N81 and the N95 8GB. And I don't doubt it will roll out to more handsets later. And so I don't think this is something particularly new. And I think it makes more sense to iron out all the bugs. I think we probably all remember the original N-Gage launch, and that was something of a fiasco, and the launch titles just weren't up to snuff, and it wasn't until later on that some of the N-Gage games really got going. So I'd rather see them get it right. And while I'm sure it's going to create a certain amount of annoyance amongst sort of high-end device owners who are aware of what's going on and regularly check things on the internet, I think the majority of people won't necessarily notice. More serious in one sense, I think, is the fact that they haven't done this testing earlier, and the fact that the launch as a whole has been delayed, because the longer it's delayed, the less people are likely to play with a new thing on their handset. They may check the N-Gage icon once, find it doesn't really do anything, and then give up on it. But I do agree with you too in that I think it could have been better handled from a marketing standpoint. Although in one sense, just leaking out the news on the official N-Gage blog is probably one way to do it. They perhaps weren't expecting such a fierce reaction that sort of been on some of the blogs, but you have to remember that's only a very limited audience, so I wonder how serious it really is. And I suspect Ewan's going to come back almost immediately down my throat on that.
Yeah, I think that's all very well, and I can completely understand that this was a normal phone. Unfortunately, this is N-Gage, this is gaming, and the gaming press who are going to crucify Nokia. They're going to miss the Christmas period. Now, I praised the N-Gage platform and the software idea because they could carry on testing and developing right up to the start of the Christmas market. But this is also making it very easy for them to miss the Christmas market. You do not miss December the 25th in the gaming sphere. That is when consoles are sold. That's when handsets are sold. That is when games are sold. I think that that Nokia have not learned... let me start that again. I think when you look at the mistakes Nokia made launching the N-Gage Classic and miscueing the gaming market, the gaming press, the people who are the actual influencers in this market that will drive a successful gaming handset, I think they misjudged them then. I think they're seriously misjudging them now, and I think that these sites are going to do their best to go N-Gage missed the boat completely. So we're going to have a wonderfully technically brilliant solution. The high-end handset users are going to love it. The specialist websites for the N-Gage, such as All About N-Gage, are going to love it. But the gaming press, everybody around them, I'm sorry, they're going to crucify Nokia for this. That's their fundamental error before. That's their fundamental error now.
Okay, I'm sure Steve will come back on that as well, Steve.
Just very quickly, I can't believe how long it's taking Nokia to get all this together. We knew about N-Gage next generation over a year ago now, possibly even 2 years ago if you listen to rumours. And I cannot believe it's taking all the different software houses this long to get a bunch of S60 native games together and tested. And it's not as if that we're talking about a new hardware platform in terms of accelerated graphics and new sound chips and new screen sizes. These are all known quantities. And N-Gage next generation is supposed to run on the N73, which is a bog standard unaccelerated handset. I cannot believe it's taken this long, and as Ewan says, to miss the Christmas market. And even so, they're launching just for one handset with one game. If they were launching for the N81 with the full spectrum of 30 games, you say, okay, it's a pretty good test of all the games across one handset. Let's get the niggles out and then make it for the wider handset market. But to go for one game for one handset, I'd think something slipped horribly in their project management.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. The only thing I'd say here is I suspect there's not necessarily the problem with the games, but rather the system that goes around it. For those of you who aren't aware, N-Gage has a considerable community aspect built around it, and there's a sort of portal through which you download the games, and also have effectively a social networking built into the N-Gage system. One thing
I'm not gonna let that one wash. Given the experience they've had with N-Gage Arena and the Dreamcast network that they had before that, they've got at least 5 years' experience in the American office and on this stuff. So no, I can't let that one wash.
So where do you think the delay is coming from then, Ewan?
I just think that they don't understand the market yet. I don't think that they've learned the lessons that they should have learned from the original N-Gage. Well, you don't miss shipping days. I mean, you hit the market as wide as possible, as fast as possible. If you're going to have 25, 30 million handsets capable of playing the games, don't lock it down to one. This is what Nokia do with every single feature. There's always one feature missing on a handset that would make it a great feature. For example, push email on E series and not N series. They're doing the same mistakes again and again.
Well, I think that's a topic we're going to have to come back to another time in terms of the more general problem. The only thing I'd say about N-Gage is I'm not actually sure it's for the traditional gaming person. I think it has a much wider scope than that. And therefore, Nokia, the mistake may be that they won't get the gaming press on their side, and that will have an impact certainly on sort of hardcore gamers. But I see the person who's being targeted by N-Gage is far more the casual type of gamer. I do agree that they've made mistakes, but I think people are perhaps being a bit too harsh, and you know, the proof will be in a couple of months' time when the system has gone live and whether people are actually using it. And at the end of the day, while the launch could hamstring them initially, I think we'll have to wait 6 months and see how the system goes. But I think Nokia should be aware that perhaps their launch hasn't been received entirely in a positive light, especially after Ewan's little rant there. So I think we'll move on to the next topic now. We'll certainly be coming back to N-Gage once we've all had a chance to try it out and actually give it a go, and we'll let you know what we think. But now we're going to move on to two sort of acquisitions or merger things that have been going on recently in the Symbian world. The first of these I think is very important for the future of Symbian in terms of being multiple UIs, and that's UIQ has just been given EU clearance for Motorola to take 50% of its ownership off Sony Ericsson, and we'll now be seeing this go forward. So what we'll end up with is UIQ will be owned 50% by Sony Ericsson and 50% by Motorola. Now I think that has some interesting implications for UIQ in terms of what will happen in the future. I think it gives it a renewed chance at having another go at growing to become the sort of second UI platform that runs on Symbian. Motorola in particular, I expect to launch a few handsets next year, but I also expect Sony Ericsson to come back very strongly. So I know the other two guys have very strong opinions on UIQ and both on the UI, but just from a practical point of view in terms of having two licensees in the ownership position, seems to me to be a lot more stable than, for example, the Symbian model where Nokia is the majority owner by quite some way. So what sort of impact do you think this will have, Steve?
I think this is always going to be a done deal. I'm always a tiny bit, not sceptical, the wrong word, but when these things are announced, Sony so-and-so is going to take over something, 50% ownership and something else, and they nearly always get green-lighted. So I'm not surprised at all by this news. I think, it's as you say, it's excellent news for UIQ. It's excellent news, too, for Motorola, which have been struggling recently, and to have a smartphone platform that they part-own and can go great guns with. It's obviously a good thing. I'm a bit frustrated by what they've done with the Z8, which is basically announce it and leave it heavily bugged and underdeveloped for month after month after month. I mean, maybe they were waiting for this green light so that they can start to pour resources in which case we'll see good things from them with the Z8 and maybe a Z10 and some other models in the new year. But they really need to pull their finger out. We've been talking about Nokia doing that with their N-Gage next generation platform. I think the same is true for Motorola in the smartphone world, and UIQ in particular. Sony Ericsson, of course, they've got other models waiting to come up. I really think they need to go back to the drawing board with some of their UI decisions there and some of their handsets. The P990, if you remember, had a more or less standard D-pad. Admittedly, you can only use it in flip-close mode, but it had that. And modern devices like the W960 and the P1i, not having a D-pad, it's just such an awful, awful UI step. When people talk about the iPhone being utterly brilliant and touch this, touch that, and it's thought out from the ground up. Up from that, you have things like the S60s of this world, but the S4 Series 40 feature phones and stuff from other manufacturers running on proprietary closed platforms, all with D-pads. People, once you get away from the iPhone, you get to a phone which you operate with one hand. It's candy bar, a slide, or whatever, clamshell, but it's got a D-pad, and you've got function buttons. You know, everyone knows how they work and what to expect. And then you suddenly see a P1i or a W960, and you think, what? How do I go there? And after a while, you figure out you do some things with the jog dial, some things with the back button, some things with the left and right arrow keys, and some things with the touchscreen. And I think the whole thing's just a complete mess there. They need to get some handsets out there that look like more like traditional handsets, and by all means use UIQ3 and most of the UIQ3 features. But they've got to go back to usability studies and make some of their upcoming devices as usable as some of the Nokias. Motorola, of course, got this non-touchscreen version of UIQ3, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing what they do with it. UIQ3 on a non-touchscreen device does make it quite a lot of sense, and I was quite impressed by the Z8, and if only it had been more stable, I think I would be having one here and playing with it more regularly. So I'm very much looking forward to that in the new year.
Yes, I mean, I agree with Steve. I think the Z8 is an impressive instance of UIQ implemented in a non-touchscreen way, and it's in some ways very similar to S60, but has its own plus points as well. But yes, there were stability problems. I may be more in favour of the sort of pen-based UI version because I've used that quite extensively with the P series, but I do think Sony Ericsson would do well to, at the very least, look at doing some kind of better combination of non-touchscreen and touchscreen, or as you say, introducing the D-pad. And presumably, we'll see something like that. I also think when we see UIQ4 come out, which I assume will happen sometime next year, we'll probably see a renewed emphasis on that and a renewed emphasis on finger touch. There's the much rumoured Sony Ericsson P5i. Whether it's a real handset or not doesn't really matter, but I think what we'll see from Sony Ericsson is taking some of this on board and hopefully producing the sort of next generation of their UIQ phones, much like is going to happen with Nokia when they go for the S60 Touch UI. It'll be very interesting to see what happens next year from that point of view. I think the other strength of UIQ to bring on is about developers, and I know Ewan spoke to Johan Sandberg, the CEO of UIQ at CGIA, And presumably you have a bit of an opinion on that, Ewan.
Yeah, I mean, just a very brief point here, which was back in late September, which was just after Sony Ericsson and Motorola made their announcement regarding UIQ. Having spoken to the developers in San Francisco at the time, and also seeing the interest at the Symbian stand and chatting to some of the UIQ staff that were manning there, no names mentioned, obviously, but if you use your head, you probably work out who. The amount of interest coming from American developers had suddenly snowballed. That once this announcement came out, it was like, we're doing this in Motorola, all the American developers were piling on, downloading SDKs, you know, getting information, and they weren't asking, you know, sort of softball questions at the stand, like, well, what phones are available? And they were asking deep API questions. They were asking what's accessible, what isn't accessible, and at what levels of coding and security it was available, to the point that I'm pretty sure that I saw Richard Harrison's programming for Symbian C++ book being used as a reference behind the wall at the stand, because they wanted to make sure that the information being given to developers on the floor was correct. Whatever management does, whatever handset design does, whatever comes out at this end on the ground for developers, UIQ is starting to gain some good traction.
Yeah, no, I definitely think it's going to be one to watch in 2008, and I think it should be a very welcome thing for everybody, because competition for S60 on the Symbian side of things will be no bad thing, and competition just generally in the smartphone or smart device market will be a good thing, and it'll be great to see Sony Ericsson and Motorola bringing their experience to bear in that area. Now, we're going to change tack slightly. I should actually just mention Navtech very briefly, which was the second of the corporate announcements I wanted to mention in this podcast. That's just to say they've got shareholder approval for the Nokia takeover, but there's not really much I want to talk about now. I do think it has some very interesting implications long term for Nokia and for the Ovi platform, but we'll wait until that's finalized and then we'll discuss that on a future podcast. But moving on to software, as I said, changing tack a little bit, with a couple of interesting bits of software coming out, and the first of which we're going to talk about is QuickOffice version 5. Now, this is something I know we've talked about a lot on the site in the past, but version 5 offers some new features, and I know Steve's been taking a look at these.
Yes, QuickOffice 5 should be out more or less by the time you hear this. So it's scheduled for Monday, the 17th of December. Can you still hear me, Rafe, by the way?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Quiet. Okay, it's still with me, guys. Okay. QuickOffice 5, the main feature, headline feature, is the fact that it now opens and edits and saves Microsoft Office 2007 XML-based files, which is a big step forward for the people in the corporate world, obviously. And there's been an immense frustration with Microsoft changing everything, and much like the step from Symbian OS 8 to OS 9, nothing was compatible and everything had to be changed.
Yes, Microsoft. I was just going to say, it's probably worth saying that this is one of the biggest change in Office formats for some time from Microsoft, so it is a very major piece of upgrade, and it will involve completely rewriting the document reading and writing code, I understand.
Yeah, and Microsoft have just got round to upgrading their own Office Mobile for the Windows Mobile handsets to read the new formats. You know, this is 6 months to a year after actually doing the change on the desktop, so that's rather tardy. QuickOffice, of course, being a third party, they've had to sort of go everything in their own way and build the code up from scratch, effectively, for this. And you can almost think of the Office 2007 version of QuickOffice as a parallel product, in a sense. It is all completely integrated and seamless, but they've had to write virtually every routine from scratch to handle this totally, totally different document structure. To the extent that if you open a pre-Office 2007 document, you can only save it in that format. And ditto for the 2007, they're almost like parallel code streams within the one application. Hopefully there'll be a degree of cross-saving, and I hope we can experiment with that for my text review on All About Symbian. Again, more or less by the time you read this, and I should have some answers on that front. Away from the 2007 compatibility, the other headline features are the fact that there's now printing for some of the other E-series devices, the E61i and E61, for example, and that'll be a major win. There's lots and lots of people I've recommended going from, for example, things like Scion Palm Tops through to the E61 range. And they've been hampered because the Scions all had printing, and all of a sudden they're left in the lurch. But so QuickOffice 5 with printing, I think, is a very worthwhile upgrade. Yes, it's $70, which is £35 if you're buying absolutely from scratch. But to be honest, if you're editing office documents sort of more or less every week, and printing them more or less every week, this, spread over the cost of 1 or 2 years ownership of a device, it really is nothing. And it's a terrific piece of software. There are also speed improvements, which I've been quite impressed with. People used to were saying that the previous version of QuickOffice, that's 4.5, was really quite slow. If you had a lot of Office documents, you know, 100 files in a project directory, it could take 30 seconds or so to bring the file list up, and that's now been tremendously speeded up. So kudos to the QuickOffice team. They've had to work over the last 4 or 5 years from absolute ground zero to build a comprehensive Office suite that can do most of the things that Microsoft Office can on the desktop. And they've done that for Palm OS for Symbian OS for S60. So kudos to them. They've done a great job. And see more for this in my text review on All About Symbian.
Yes, I mean, I agree with you, Steve. It's a very impressive application. I mean, I can't think of any other application that has quite such broad and rich functionality to the device as QuickOffice, especially something that's relatively widespread and will have quite a lot of popular use cases. I know a lot of people will sort of go, but I don't read or write Office files on my phone. But I think it's worth remembering that there's a lot of different types of users, and read-only in particular is quite popular. That's now sort of a standard part of most S60 phones. But writing, especially on the E-series, is still a big thing. I know it's something I do on a fairly regular basis. And I think the printing one in particular is worth highlighting, because this is, you know, a significant piece of functionality, especially if you're thinking like a device like the E90, where you have got a full keyboard and editing significant amount of a document is quite realistic. Being able to print on the move is a really significant boon. So, I mean, I would also say kudos to QuickOffice, because the applications are also, they follow the style guide, they look like native S60 applications, and I, for one, am very impressed by them. I think a lot of developers could look at these applications and look at some of the UI use cases, look at some of the things they do, and learn a lot from them. Have you got anything to follow up on that, Steve?
Yeah, just to say that the QuickOffice does present me with a problem as an All About Symbian reviewer. We start when they produced their first, whatever it was, the 2.5 or 3.85. I scored it 84 points out of 100, no problem. They keep adding stuff and improving it, and it crept up and crept up, crept up, and is now 90 in the current review. And they've added more stuff, which take it to 91, 92. And the interesting thing is, you think that that would be virtually perfect, and yet there are still things that are missing, which is frustrating. It's such an insanely great application that's had an insane amount of work in it, and yet still some things like a word count in the word processor and charting in the spreadsheet are completely missing. And it's tempting to say, oh, well, knock off 10 points and knock the score back down. But the rest of it is of such high quality that you just can't not score it as a mega app. But I would still like to see QuickOffice not rest on their laurels, and I'm sure they'll carry on working and adding these two features.
Absolutely. That's why we use a logarithmic scale when we get into the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, so QuickOffice, Steve's not happy because you're making his life as an application reviewer too difficult. Make it easier, just make it perfect in the next iteration, and that'll keep us all very happy.
The amount of feedback the bug developers team have got from Steve, I do hope that they take up that challenge.
Yeah, Steve's face is almost certainly on their dartboard as someone who provides more bug reports than anybody else. So staying with software, I just think one thing that's worth mentioning as we're coming to this end of the podcast is the new iteration of Symbian Sign, which has now gone live, having been announced at the smartphone show. We won't go into too much detail here, apart from to say there's something called Express Signed, which means developers can now sign their applications for $20, and I think that's going to have a fairly significant impact in the amount of applications we see being released in terms of some of the niche applications, but also applications being updated with small bug fixes or language variants. So there's been a lot of complaints about Symbian Signed over the years, and it's a fairly complex process to understand, because on one instance people go, I don't understand why it exists. But as Symbian has gone out to more and more handsets, the operators said, we want some kind of security on these phones. And even when it's in one sense probably pretty unnecessary, because Symbian as an OS has security built into it in a fairly heavy way, there are some cases for what's called human engineering. That's where you could have an application that could potentially send lots of SMS messages. And yes, you probably do need some kind of certification to prevent that happening or users being ripped off. So on the one hand, people don't understand it. But on the other hand, I think it's one of those necessary evils, because Symbian has become so popular that it's been demanded by the operators. I think Symbian have done very well to respond by reducing the fee down to $20. So hopefully that will lower the burden on developers in terms of what they're going to have to do to get their applications released. And I'm sure Symbian will continue to work on this, but thumbs up from me for Symbian. And Ewan, have you got anything on that?
Yeah, I mean, very briefly, it's another step in the right direction. I think the fundamental problem I have with Symbian Sign boils down to a very simple thing. It should have stayed in-house from the start. Symbian's idea to pass it out to other testing houses who then, you know, drive the price down in a capitalistic way, I think severely hampered Symbian Signed over the last 2 or 3 years. And it's a little known fact that every Palm application out there needs to have a 4 or 5 letter code that you apply for from Palm. You have to apply to Symbian to get your UID code. And I really do wish that that it stayed in-house, that they'd absorbed the cost, you know, that was the price of doing business. They would have been in a much stronger position to talk about application, the sort of wide ecosystem they're creating. They would have been able to track the developers, the active developers, the ones that are doing proper applications, much easier than relying on third-party services to feed into spreadsheets in some deep, dark office in the bowels of South Waterloo. You know, where they're going now is great. I just wish that they had made a more pragmatic decision 6 years ago.
Yeah, I think hindsight can be quite beneficial in these circumstances.
And I think you'll say that I actually wrote that 6 years ago, though.
Yeah, so Simbin, listen to you and more.
Listen to me.
He's always right.
And this podcast is going to go on forever and ever and ever, isn't it, right?
Talking of which, yes, it's time. We've run over time, as we're quite often doing, we're finding. Oh. We haven't got through all the topics, but we're hopefully going to do one more podcast this year, which will be a special Christmas edition. And I know we'll be answering that much-asked question, which handset does Father Christmas use? So that's something to look forward to next week. But thanks for listening. And as ever, if you've got any feedback, please let us know. And it's goodbye from me in Sussex. And I'm sure the other guys will say goodbye now.
Goodbye from me in Reading.
And goodbye now.
Okay, thanks guys, and thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the All About Symbian podcast. www.allaboutsymbian.com. Copyright 2007.